Good morning. My wife and I were hiking Whistler a few years ago with our kids, and Marshall, my son, who was all of, 7 or 8, we were hiking back from Flute, and he was curious, "How much further, Dad?" And I said, "Well, do you see that ridge? We have to climb over that yet to get back to the gondola." And he looked at it, and he's like, "Oh, that's going to be painful." But he said it in such a cheerful voice. And we just laughed, and we thought that was interesting. Life has a way of doing that, where you see this huge thing before you, and you're intimidated by it, and you're like, "Wow, that's going to be painful to get through." But along the way, you have some beautiful views, and you have some amazing times, but your muscles hurt, and they cramp, and everything else, and you're finding you're low on water and fuel, and but you make it. So that's part of the story.
It's not always easy.
Right. So my name is Rob Andries. We moved to Squamish 2.5 years ago. I grew up in the Mennonite Brethren Church in southern Ontario in Niagara-on-the-Lake. I grew up on a fruit farm, peaches and cherries. And I went to a church that I would say was more protectionistic in its culture. It was very much, we need to save our kids from anything evil outside of these walls. And from that perspective, I'm going to say that it's more of a bounded set way of thinking. So yep, there's some math in this. So I know there's some math geeks out there. So in a centered set, you have some data points, and there's like what's inside of this bounded set. A bounded set. Inside of a bounded set, this could be your church or your way of thinking. I am male, and therefore I'm in my bounded set, and my wife is not in that set, right? So I'm male, I'm from Ontario, I now live in BC, I'm a dual citizen of the US and Canada. The more data you add, the more restrictive that set is, right? And so I would say that there's some churches that we grew up in that may have that idea of this is who we are, and we need to protect from these people out here who are not like us, right? So that's just kind of an idea of kind of where I came from with that.
I grew up in eastern Iowa, and so I'm American. And my dad was a pastor. He planted churches all over eastern Iowa and Illinois and West Des Moines. And so everyone in my small town growing up of 13,000 people knew that I was a pastor's kid. And so I got labeled from a very early age that I should be a certain way and act a certain way. And sometimes that didn't always happen, and they were confused by that. My parents gave me an amazing knowledge of how to have a relationship with God and Jesus. And it wasn't about the rules. It was about having that relationship and following him as best as you can, and that I needed him. And it wasn't until I went to University of Iowa, studied anthropology and art, that I met my husband, Rob.
Right. So I went to Ryerson in Toronto for computer science. I threw my resume on the internet, and I said, "God, wherever you want me to go, I'll go." And I ended up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, of all places. I was really hoping to be in Colorado, to be in the mountains. I was hoping to be in North Carolina so I could do mountains and the beach. I ended up in Cedar Rapids. And I remember being kind of upset at him for that, because I wanted more out of life than corn. So
he had never been there before, by the way.
I had never set foot. I had a phone interview, and suddenly I'm in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, getting off a plane. So life kind of happens sometimes. From there, we decided that, you know, before we get into the long version of life with children, we would take a sabbatical, and I had been coming to Whistler to ski, and my wife had not, and I'm like, well, we should go there, and my wife's idea was, hey, let's move to Whistler before we have kids. I'm like, oh, let's do that, yeah. So we sold our stuff, and we went to Whistler for a period of time in 2004-05. We would just come down to Squamish just for groceries and gas. It was a drive-through town. You know, I'm sure that you guys understand what the history of Squamish is with that.
I had a different perspective of Squamish then than I do now.
Right. So after that point, when we were in Whistler, we got back into the game of life, and we were expecting a child, and we ended up in St. Louis, Missouri, where we spent the next 8 or 9 years of our life. When we were in St. Louis, we went to what I would say is the most culturally relevant church I've ever been to. This church detoxed us from Christianese and the way that I guess I would have previously have acted in and outside of a church. And it made me understand that we're all on a journey, and that so long as we're asking questions or trying to figure this out, that what a great place to be no matter where you are in your walk, to be able to say, you know what, there might be something more to this life than just the physical, but there's also some spiritual things to this as well. So from that perspective, going back to set theory again, that would be called centered set. And so if you can imagine, that's bounded set, where you have a wall around yourself with what's inside of you. From a centered set perspective, let's say there's a center dot here, and let's call this dot Jesus or God. You would like it moved. Is that better? Okay. So let's say this dot is Jesus. And maybe you guys are right here. And then we'll say any dot around outside of this are every single person on the planet, right? And there are people that are all over the place on this map. There are some that are a mile away. You can't even see the dot, right? But this set is all about motion and where you are in time. And so at a particular moment in time, you're here. But what if a year from now, this dot moves to here? So there's an idea of motion. And the idea is, I may be here heading towards Jesus. Somebody might be a mile away, but also having their arrow tending towards Jesus, trying to figure that out. Now, I may have some more perks being a little closer. Maybe I have, like, whatever those perks are, like maybe
parents that teach you.
Yeah, but there's some perks being closer. Maybe, but within this, if I start tending away from Jesus, and somebody's way out there tending towards Jesus, by this theory, they could be in a better spot than I am as I'm tending away from him. Does that make sense? And so we ended up in a church that was much more centered set, where this is our goal. Our center of our life is Jesus. And so long as you're asking questions and all this stuff, that's great. Let's engage these conversations. There were atheists that were coming to the church, and they were many of them, not many, some of them ended up on the pastoral staff, you know, obviously being no longer atheists, but believing in Jesus. When we first started going to that church, there was about 2,000 or 2,500 people. When we left, they had multiple sites because they couldn't fit them anymore, and there was around 9,000 people when we left in 8 years. And so what was interesting to us was, the church detoxed us. It also set an example of how to relate to your community, how to use language that people would understand, that was not Christianese. And unwittingly, it actually did change our language and everything, and it allowed us to be a part of our community much more effectively. And so it was through this time that we understood how potentially a church could grow in its community and relate to its people.
Which is really helping us now,
right?
Just be in community.
So from that point, in 2013, we were feeling we had a lot of unrest in our souls.
We felt there was something more, and I had a conversation with Rob one night where everything just kind of came out. There was something that I couldn't quite put my finger on, but I was getting stirred up inside that I think this isn't all we want out of life.
We hit a plateau. Our life was dialed in. I had USB outlets in my house, and I didn't have a weed in my lawn, and, you know, that's what you do in suburbia. So, you know, our life was dialed in, but there's got to be something more. It's something we're missing here, right?
And we also wanted to teach our children certain things, that it wasn't all about having the best everything and having a perfect life, and we enjoyed outdoors a lot more, and we were kind of far from outdoors. We did a lot of road biking because that was what we had. We just had a lot of cornfields to get out into the roads. And
we would bike for an hour and 45 minutes and maybe ascend 10 meters of elevation. So
it was kind of my desert place, actually. I did a lot of more artwork.
Yeah, the wind was our hill.
Yep.
but then we talked, like, there's got to be something more. And we prayed to Jesus and to God and said, you know, what do you want of us? What do you want us to do? We had no idea what that meant. We just knew that there's got
to
be more.
We gave it to him. Yeah, so we gave it to him that night, and we're like, okay, we know there's something else. Show us. And that night I had a dream that was very specific. And this has happened to me in my life many times before, where God will give me a very specific dream, even a layout of a house, and I will literally walk through the house and say, yep, that's the one. So my dad encouraged me and said, you can trust this. God has proven it over and over. And I have dreams a lot, but there's certain ones that are different, and I can tell the difference. And especially since we had prayed that night that he would show us something, and then this was a direct answer to that prayer. And even now I can remember more vividly than even, you know, reading it in my journal. There's things I left out in my journal that I still remember more clearly. That's another test for me. There was a layout of a house. There was roads. And leading up to, there's like snapshots. So I'm not even sure if the house is next to where these roads were or not. But in the dream, there were schools, there was power lines, there were certain landmarks that I recognized later. And even details about getting in on the house before anyone else made an offer. And now knowing what Squamish is and what's been happening here, it makes more sense.
But the dream also said that it was like a place.
Yeah, even in my dream, there was some, it was like a place in Squamish, I wrote in my journal, which I didn't realize until we had moved here and looked back on my journal later.
Right.
That's funny.
So, and there were some other things in there about your future with business and stuff and other things with art and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And there were some encouraging things that were for us. But the point is that we had this idea now that, okay, something's up.
There's something more.
What is going to happen or okay, something might happen. I don't know.
We don't know when or where.
Because in the past, Andrea has had these dreams about houses and layouts, and even as a little girl, her family would inevitably end up in these places. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the fourth time I think this has happened to you. So the previous three times it has happened. So hasn't happened quite yet. We don't know what the timing is, but the point is that, okay, well, we trust enough to move. Mm-hmm. So about 2 weeks after this dream, actually, we were here for my cousin's wedding in Ladner, and we went up to Whistler to do a hike. We had not been there since 04-05, and when we were hiking down Whistler, Andrea rolled her ankle, which changed the trajectory of her life. What happened?
It was a very fluke thing.
Yeah. And so what we were going to hike the Chief the next day. Instead of the Chief, we went to the Spit. Now, I knew of the Spit from being here before. So
I think we just wanted to show the kids the ocean, right?
Yeah. And so we have to, don't distract me, please. I'm in emotion here.
Sorry.
So So we knew of the spit. We went there and to watch the kiteboarders and to do something else that was not climbing with an ankle. And so after that, we came out of the spit, and she had wanted to go to Save On Foods to take a picture in a grocery store because she had fond memories of Save On Foods in the bulk section or something. So
coming out to see the mountains from a grocery store from Iowa, that was, doesn't happen, right?
That was pretty special.
It's pretty cool to me.
You walk out and it's like, what? So instead of going back to 99, because we had blocked the period of time for the chief, and instead now we have way extra time, so I'm like, I'm just going to drive around. I have no idea. I've never been down this road before. I'm going to fiddle around. I ended up on Buckley. I had never been on that road before in my life. And so we're going around a corner, and it was near the high school, and then Andrea freezes. And I turn to her, and I'm like, this is it, isn't it? And she's like, yeah. And the
schools started lining up, the roads, like it was just like deja vu, and you actually noticed me change.
I noticed her change, yeah. And then at that point, which was I thought was really funny, there was a certain song on the radio that will play, or at least a clip of it. So Dare You to Move played from Switchfoot.
Yeah, right as I'm feeling that deja vu moment.
And I'm getting chills right now thinking about it. But it was so crazy. And I look up and I'm like, that is hilarious, God. You have a great sense of humor on that one. Good one. And to Dare You to Move, okay. Because that was the realization point that this is actually the spot, the area. I just couldn't believe his humor in that. So at the same time, I was like, well, this is going to be very interesting to see how this happens because I don't think we could sell our house. I love my job. My resume, due to my job being outsourced and different other things that happened, is in shambles. If I just switch my jobs too quickly, I need to have a certain period of time at a job to make it, you know, more appealing, we'll say. And so all this is happening, and I'm like, I have no idea how this will go. So I said to him, this is going to be very interesting to see how this is going to work. So a week later, we come back from this vacation, and first day back, I get notice from my boss's boss that my boss is no longer my boss. And we were doing some great things at work. And the person that was to become my boss was somebody that we were trying to keep at arm's length from my project. Whenever this individual would get to know some things about our project, things would hit the fan, and I have to do damage control for 4 to 6 hours during my day, which was not fun. So now I report to somebody I don't respect. And as a man, that's kind of a difficult place to be. When I first got hired there, I said, I do A, I don't do B. If you want B, hire somebody else. And I was doing A under my old boss. My new boss, she switched me to B. So everything fell apart within 5 days of me getting back from this realization of perhaps someday we might move and suddenly my job is... So it was quite an interesting realization at that moment.
Meanwhile, I'm feeling this huge urge to purge and to sell things. I just had a gut instinct. There was nothing else. That's all I had to go on. And if I stopped and I did artwork or I did anything else, I felt a lot of all my peace left. I felt upset. Things would kind of fall apart with my kids and at home. And so as soon as I would start purging and cleaning and organizing, I felt great and life would go smoothly. And so I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go on it. And I didn't even feel like I could go to Sam's Club to buy bulk groceries anymore or buy tons of things. I'm like, okay, this is really weird, God, but I need you to confirm this with my husband. Please show more than just this gut. I would fast and pray a lot, and interesting things would happen in direct correlation to those moments. So, what else do you want? Oh, Also during this time, I was led to read Mark 10:17 for like a straight month. And growing up, like we all, I don't know about you, but we kind of had fears or thought of this verse as, okay, if you're a Christian, you have to sell everything and live.
You need to read the verse.
I will read the verse, but I'm just leaving. Yeah. So I read this verse, and it says, as Jesus was starting out on his way to Jerusalem, a man came running up to him, knelt down, and asked, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Why do you call me good? Jesus asked. Only God is truly good. But to answer your question, you know the commandments. You must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not falsely testify. You must not cheat anyone. Honor your father and mother. Teacher, the man replied, I've obeyed all these commandments since I was young. Looking at the man, Jesus felt genuine love for him. There is still one thing you haven't done. He told him, go and sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And then come follow me. At this, the man's face fell, and he went away sad, for he had many possessions. Jesus looked around and said to his disciples, how hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God. This amazed them, but Jesus said again, dear children, it's very hard to enter the kingdom of God. In fact, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God. The disciples were astounded. Then who in the world can be saved? They asked. Jesus looked at them intently and said, humanly speaking, it is impossible, but not with God. Everything is possible with God. And then Peter began to speak up. We've given everything to follow you, he said. Yes, Jesus replied, and I assure you that everyone who has given up house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or property for my sake and for the good news will receive now in return 100 times as many houses, brothers, sisters, mothers, children, and property, along with persecution. And in the world to come, that person will have eternal life. But many who are the greatest now will be least important then, and those who seem least important now will be the greatest then. And so now in context, you understand how sometimes this verse can be... Sometimes people feel guilt with this verse, wouldn't you say, Rob?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm supposed to sell everything. You know, material possessions aren't good. They're the enemy, and we need to give everything away, right? And
yeah, there's guilt to that, but so that's not the point of it.
The point of it, though, was, are you willing to follow me no matter what? Am I the most important in your life? If I want you to go somewhere, would that be more important than your comfort, than the things that you cling to? Will you cling to me? And so I surrendered all of it, and now, looking back, I didn't realize how much I did put my comfort and my emphasis on certain things. And as I was cleaning house and as I was purging, he was working on my heart, too, so much. And that was a special time.
Yeah. We had a deal with... it says giving up house, it says giving up father and mother, and so we've had to deal with some stuff with that as well. My family wasn't too pleased that I was moving across the way to this side from Ontario, right? So it's even further away. And so there was struggles there that we had to deal with as well. So there's struggles along the way. You give up things, you're all these things, so.
Yeah, and my family is all over the U.S., Florida, and Minnesota. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, so that's hard. It's hard to give up certain things that, you know.
All right.
What? So I went through a lot of questioning during this time, and it was a really confusing time because when you just go on gut instincts, it's not enough, right? You're like, okay, I need to be shown something more. So one day I reached a breaking point, and I was working with a friend all day, and she was asking me about committing to some things in the fall. And I didn't feel like I could commit to anything for some reason. And I couldn't tell her either. She was a very good friend of mine. And that after she left, I just broke down and I was crying and praying. And I was like, okay, God, I'm fine if it's 2 years. You know, I'm fine with that. But please tell me, because my gut tells me it's sooner. And if it's sooner, you got to show me today. And I laid it on the line. I'm like, it's got to be today because I'm done. And I can't do this anymore because we hadn't even told anyone at this point. It was just you and me. And I was like, I need to be shown something more. So that day, Rob comes home and he asked me how my day was. And I just lost it. I was like, I'm done. Like, I can't go on anymore. And I need something more. So then Rob told me, you want to say that? He told me, he's like, well, what? I wasn't going to tell you this, but a company contacted me today for an interview. And I said yes. And I'm like, all right, because this whole time he wasn't sure if he was going to take that step and to, you know, interview quite yet. And so that was a huge deal, right, that we started that process
at that point. Yeah, and it helped us. It helped you and helped different clarifying. Yeah. You know, we're sharing some big rocks. There were about 40 other little rocks along the way. We will not be telling you every single bit of this story. It's just too complicated and it's too personal anyway. But, you know, there's some interesting things along the way here. So one of the things that there's a quote that we like, waiting is the hardest work of hope. Mm-hmm. So that's what was really interesting for us during this time. So moving forward, as time permits us, so I ended up accepting a job as a director in Vancouver for an internet security company. Had a great time there. It was like my dream job. It's what I wanted to always aspire to in my career. And so I made the move in March ahead of the family. And so told the kids that we don't really know when we'll see you next, when I will see you next. And I stay with my uncle in Ladner while I'm paying for my mortgage in St. Louis. And you are cleaning up the house, getting ready for it to go.
Mm-hmm. So Rob was gone for 6 weeks, and that was a really hard time. And but when you were going to come back at a certain point, and
this is
before you left, we had a garage sale, and I just got overwhelmed in the garage sale. Like, I felt like I was just giving things away practically. I never had more successful garage sales. Sometimes people come, sometimes they don't, right? But this time, everything went so easily. It was amazing. And I just sat there, and I felt overwhelmed with God's presence in a way that I've never felt before. I felt his pleasure. I felt like I was obedient with everything that he asked me to do. And it was a really sweet moment that I'll never forget, just feeling his love and, you know.
So before I left, the last Sunday, I left on a Monday, and before I left on Sunday, I went back to the main campus of this church. I hadn't been there in 2 years because we were at a multi-site, and they were doing live streaming and whatnot. But regardless, I wanted to see kind of just the campus before we left. And so we came early, and I sat down in the auditorium. And this gentleman, this man sits beside me, and we start chatting. And I'm saying, on this quite an amazing God journey I'm on, like I'm leaving to go to Vancouver for this internet security company thingamabobber. And he's like, oh, that's interesting. Wait, what company? And I told him, and he says, well, that's funny. I'm the head of the security at MasterCard. I'm actually like the, I don't know, chief or senior director, senior VP, whatever, over fraud at MasterCard. And MasterCard is based in St. Louis. And he goes, we're actually talking to that company. I'm like, what? And so I just thought it was amazing, this small little company in Vancouver, and he just is mind blown. And here we are worshiping Jesus together that morning in church. Like, that was just so bizarre. And so my company thought that was amazing, that I have the in with this gentleman, right? And so once I got here, they're like, well, you know what? We're going to pay you to go back to St. Louis because we want you with us when we go talk to them, right? And so that was my in to come back, and I was able to combine that trip, fully paid, to get my family to come back with me. But we weren't sure at that time, but then this happened.
So at the time, he was just going to come back for a visit. We weren't going to leave until the house sold. So, and the house was not selling, and it had been months. So one morning, I had another dream, and this one was pretty intense, and I'll just share that with you. I'm going to read it out of here because I think I wrote some of it down a little bit better. I was playing soccer when all of a sudden my husband and a line of men with torches on fire came to the field behind us, setting it ablaze. I was going to fight back at first. I tried throwing the logs that were on fire back at the men, especially trying to hurt my husband. All of the men were lining up to go back into the ocean. He, my husband, was very strong, and I'd be throwing these small logs that he was throwing huge logs completely on fire back at me. I surrendered then. I went to him. He was towards the front of the line, and I knew I wanted to leave with him because the whole place would soon be on fire. He jumped into the ocean, and then we all got into small boats. Then I was handed a torch in the boat, and the man who looked at me was very loving and yet very serious. I had never seen a look on anyone's face quite like that, and I knew it to be Jesus. He lit my torch on fire, and I was proud of how I held it out to him, steadily reaching back as long as I could as the boat was moving past him. He was giving instructions to another man in the boat with my husband, telling him to remember to put the cloak on fire and to keep us warm and to set it on the table. I knew we would probably be cold out in the ocean, but I was thankful to get out alive. My running shoes were wet again, but it was so serious that I was thankful to be alive. And I can't explain the emotions of the dream very well, but when I woke up, I was ready to just run out of the house and leave at that second. I didn't even care about anything else. If Rob would have said, okay, we're going, I would have left at that very second. That's how intense the dream was in my emotional state.
Right.
So I texted Rob, and it was probably around, I think I put on here, it was like 3:30 in the morning. So I'm like, yeah, right, he's not going to be up. But you were.
I was up, and I was having my own struggles that night here in Vancouver. I was staying at a friend's house that weekend, and we talked, and it was just quite an emotional time. And I'm like, wow, really, God? I have to step out in faith again? Like, I have to come here without selling my house? Like, I have to, now I'm going to pay rent and mortgage? Oh, man. I was not thrilled about that concept. It took me about 12 hours to warm up to the idea. By the time I went to bed that night, I was like, okay, we're doing it. But, you know, it was another step of faith that I really wasn't interested in taking. So we ended up here. I went back. We packed. We sold the house. Well, we didn't sell the house. We packed it up. We had 9 suitcases and a cat. We hopped on a plane, and we came here with 9 suitcases. We had a small little container that came with us, like a 5-by-8-foot container. And then our travel trailer came about 2 months later with a few things in it. And that's all we came with. So now we're here, and I'm working down at...
Wait, you missed a big cut. While we're on the plane, someone walked through our house
right. And
gave us an offer that weekend, and it was Easter weekend, and we accepted that offer. So while we were on the plane leaving, I find it so amazing
right. That
God provided someone for our house, and you didn't have to go through paying for 2 things.
It's amazing that you had to take the step before he would move, apparently. I don't know. At least in that instance, it doesn't always have to be that way, but... So then the thing about being in Vancouver for me that was weird, because I kind of felt like we were here to be in relational community, is that I'm spending 15 hours a week going down to Vancouver and just sleeping here. So I thought that was kind of an odd thing on this whole thing. But as God would have it, at the 5.5-month mark, I lost my job. What was really interesting about that was 3 months in, I was told I was exceeding expectations. 3 weeks before I was let go by the CEO, I was told by my boss that we were not, without my leadership and organization, they could not be doing what they're doing right now. A week and a half before I was let go, I was at the beach with my boss and his family and my family. And then I got called in the CEO's office saying, we don't want to go forward with you. I'm like, what? He's like, you look surprised. So, you know, you go through these emotions, right? And I'm like, really? And I'm like, really, God? Like, you called me here, and now I don't even have a job in one of the most expensive places on the planet. Like, what in the world is this? So he's just wrenching this whole money thing with me like crazy, right? I'm already kind of freaking out with house prices. And so this is all happening. And then I get to the point where, you know, you go through the grief, and then you get angry, right? There's the anger part of the grief process. And I'm honestly pissed off at God. I am not too thrilled with him. And therefore, I'm an angry bear, and I'm an angry to everybody in my life. I know my kids can attest to that during that time. And so, exactly. And so what was really interesting was about a week into that, I heard something in my brain, a thought that I don't normally think this way in the third person, but I clearly heard this paragraph, which was, okay, you've gotten it out of your system for a week now. You better stop doing this or you're going to look really foolish when this turns out for your benefit. And I'm like, okay, I don't think that way, right? And so I made a purposeful decision to give up my anger, to trust in him more. And, my life,
boy,
my
were
actions.
Boy, were we happy about that.
Yes, yes, indeed. And so that changed. And it ended up that I accepted a job. I now work remotely, which is awesome. I no longer have the commute. I work for a previous coworker of mine, so I'm friendly with that. I'm also the only... We're all working remotely, so I'm not like the odd man out. It's a company fully remote. I have a coworker in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Idaho. And I got paid like $5,000 less than I was getting paid as a director to commute, which, as we all know, for commuting costs, that's a gain, right? And then on top of that, I'm getting paid American dollars, which is like crazy, right? And so I was like, geez, I guess it did turn out for my benefit, right? So... with that, though, it's kind of interesting, right? We lost money on our house in St. Louis, and, the way house prices are going here, it's pretty crazy. It's, what, doubled plus since we've got here or whatever. And I've been blessed with an excavator. You know, I was shoveling this mound of gravel, right, with maybe my hands, maybe a nice shovel, but it was a big... Maybe the mound of gravel was as high as this building, right? That was my mortgage, right? And I've been now given an excavator because I have this amazing job, right? And so, yeah, I can clear around that rubble pile. The problem is that rubble pile turned into, like, Round Mountain up there, right? And so I could work at that Round Mountain for my whole life with that awesome, expensive excavator, and I'll never get there. So it's kind of – there's been a lot of this whole – trust in God house thing going on with us. And so so there's been a lot of hurt and healing in that. There's been a lot of trying to trust him with this idea, this concept of why I even came is this, you know, it's important for me as a man to provide for my family and to provide shelter and to what I thought was to own a house. And I've had to give that up. And is he good? What is a good father? Can I trust him? What is love? What is, I feel like you've left me alone out here. You've put me out here and it's doubled. And I don't understand because you don't want us to be underneath slavery. And then this whole mortgage financial slavery thing, like, I don't want to be underneath that much weight in my life. And I don't understand how that all works. And so, you know, there was a lot of questions. And then, you know, this winter and spring with Darcy's series on what is a good father and all that, and all we've been going through with the Lord's Prayer, was very applicable to my journey as I'm figuring this stuff out, right? And so there's been healing with that. But I was depressed this winter. I was really at a spot where I could hardly care about anything or anybody. And, that's part of the journey. That's part of hiking up these ridges, right? And so, but I got to the other side of that. And amazingly enough, I'm in a spot right now where, for the first time in my life, I'm not anxious about anything. And it's like I had to go through all of this hard stuff to get to a spot where I'm not anxious about anything. I'm not anxious about my kids' choices for their future. I know that they're in God's hands. I will guide them, but I can't control them. I'm not anxious about the house. I just have faith in God, and maybe it's not a house. I don't know anymore. I'm just trusting right now, and I'm not anxious about it. You know, I still have questions. I'm still trying to figure out some things, but it's not this thing in me anymore. And it's an amazing place to be. I know I will, I'm sure anxiety will come again in some form, or, you know, maybe not, I don't know. But right now I'm enjoying where I'm at with this. And so there's some healing there along the way. My daughter likes to add stuff to the stories. But anyway. So this is kind of where we're at. There were a few other kind of weird things along the way. But for my 40th birthday in 2013, Andrea bought me a full suspension bike. And I live in St. Louis. Why do I need a full suspension bike? Like, I didn't understand. Why would I need that? And it just boggled my mind because I'm like, I'm doing the finances and I'm looking at the numbers and the budget. I'm like, why would we spend money on that? That doesn't make any sense.
I really felt he needed it.
Apparently I did. And so, you know, that worked out. Here's another funny thing. I was hoping to win a truck, so I wanted to sign us up for a GMC sweepstakes. And I signed up Andrea and...
He didn't tell me he signed me up.
And so I signed her up and me up for GMC sweepstakes. I wanted a truck. Well, we didn't win a truck. We won a trip to the Super Bowl in New York City. And this was right during that time as we were moving and leaving. And in fact, we were in New York City the week before I started my job here.
But even then, God provided a time where we could connect before he left for 6 weeks, and it was really special.
I just thought the timing of that was amazing, that he gave, before we didn't know how long we'd be apart, and he gave us like that long weekend to just have fun with each other and that.
It also solidified we don't want to live in a city.
There's that, too. So, I think I've arrived at a spot where I've understood the secret of what Paul was saying about being content in every situation. And, you know, it's easy to say, but to look at it from a God perspective, a heavenly perspective, and I think we all know that, but sometimes it's hard to sink in sometimes. So I think I've come to that realization a little bit. But overall, I mean, we need to wrap it up here. We feel that we love being relational in the community and living life to the full, and I think that's why we're here. It's part of it. I mean, we love and enjoy that, but we want to give the river a message as well that I think is encouraging. The world is made up of different types of people, and that's one of the reasons why we have so many different types of churches, right? And we believe that the river is uniquely situated in Squamish as a center-set church that meets the needs of the new types of people that are coming to Squamish. And as Squamish has changed over the last X years, as we all know, Squamish has changed and is changing, I think we need all churches. This is not a somebody's better than anybody else, not at all. We need all churches and for different types of people. But there is a new type of person that is coming that we believe the river is uniquely situated to affect, to help, to be part of, to be in relation with. And I want to encourage the church to say that...
it's a safe place to ask questions here.
Yeah.
And it's full of grace. Where there's gray areas, where you don't think you know everything, there's a lot of grace.
There's a lot of gray in life, and where there's gray, there's grace. Right? And I believe that to be true here at the river.